morning, everybody. July 7th, 2016. This is Randy Bolander on the weekly podcast on the busiest week of the summer. I don't know if it's your busiest week of the summer, but it's ours. Earlier this week, we had a baby born at Zoe's house. Not literally at Zoe's house, but you understand. At the hospital, like they should be born. And we're able to place that baby with a family. We have a great story on this one, like out of sight. Can't tell it right now, but I will. One day, we'll tell it. It's going to be amazing. Also, then on Tuesday was Zion's birthday. Zion turned 15 on Tuesday. Wednesday was Piper's birthday. She turned 7. We took some of her little friends to see the Dory movie, which I rate movies by how many naps I get. Yeah, I give Dory 2 naps because I slept twice in Dory. And that's just how it works. Sorry. And then today, July 7th, is our 27th wedding anniversary. 27 years since Kelsey and I were married at Tri-County Assembly of God in Cincinnati, Ohio, seating for 4,000 with about 200 guests there. And it looked like there were BBs in a barrel. It was the funniest thing. When I never thought about that. I just, to be quite honest, I never thought much about the ceremony. I just showed up. I just wanted to be married, and Kelsey put it together, and it was lovely. But we came out. I came out, and everybody fit in the front, like, 3 rows. And it just struck me as the funniest thing. I still remember kind of chuckling it to myself, this large building, and hardly anybody there. But we're still married 27 years later. If you don't know Kelsey, you are really missing out. She is definitely the better half. I was thinking this morning as I got out of the shower, and most, if not all, of my craziest ideas were her crazy ideas first, for real. I mean, most of the really like out there things that we have done over the years, and we've done a couple, originated with her going, you know what we maybe ought to do. And so she has played a massive role in the direction of our family and just in me being who I am. You think I'm bad now. You just imagine a me without her. Oh, my word. Unbearable. I couldn't even think about it. So all has been good. I've been her 27-year project and look forward to decades more. Love her much. Happy anniversary, honey. Going to talk on a very serious note this morning, though, and want to transition into that with a song, or part of a song anyway, by Bob Dylan. If you're not familiar with this song, I would encourage you, find it, listen to it. It's called Hurricane. It's a story of Hurricane Carter, who was a boxer in the 60s, unjustly accused, spent 20 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. Pistol shots ring out in a barroom night. Enter Betty Valentine from the upper hall. She sees a bartender in a pool of blood. Cries out, my God, let's kill them all. Here comes the story of the hurricane. The man the authorities came to blame for something that he never done. Put in a prison cell, but one time he could have been the champion of the world. Now, I chose to play this morning in light of some recent shootings of black men. And just kind of to accentuate the fact that we are decades, no, we are centuries into the unjust treatment of blacks. And in light of a couple of recent shootings, of course, the one in New Orleans and then the one in Minneapolis, even more recently, I just began to think about the case of Hurricane Carter. 1966, he was arrested along with his friend John Artis for a triple homicide. It was committed in Paterson, New Jersey. Police went through the car and they found ammunition from guns that were of the caliber that were used at the shooting. Now, what they didn't tell anybody at the time and didn't come up till much later was the ammunition was actually different. It fit the guns, but it was not the kind of casings. They found brass casings in one place and they were something else, steel or whatnot in the car. So they were not the same ammo, but it was the same caliber, and that was enough. They got the testimony of a petty criminal who admitted that he was in the area because he was there to burglarize a local factory. He was on his way to work. He was a criminal on his way to work, saw a crime, and accused Hurricane Carter. Hurricane spent 20 years in prison, maybe 19, just short of 20 years, until he was freed due to the lobbying of a group that takes up unjust causes. But the guy had his life torn from him because he was a black man and in the wrong spot at the wrong time. And so in light of the shootings that have happened this week, I just began thinking about this. And I want to say there are not enough public facts for me to address these specific shootings in depth. They're just really not. More will come out supporting the police. More will come out supporting the victim. There will be truth on both sides. Neither side will hear it. They'll be arguing about the validity of people's shootings while their bodies have not yet cooled. It's not even productive. It just reinforces the problem, which is that nobody's listening to anybody. But the thought came to me the other night as I was reading about this, that I have never, ever had an interaction with an authority figure where I figured or thought that my life might be threatened. Never had that happen, ever. Never once have I been pulled over and wondered, am I going to be shot? I've been scared, but I've been scared I was going to get what I deserved, not getting shot. And I realize as I even say that, some of you say, well, yes, but when you were pulled over, you were respectful. Well, I mean, yeah, scared to death and respectful. One, we don't know that these men weren't. We really don't. We're assuming they weren't. If that's your only defense, you're assuming they weren't respectful. Number two, is that the world you want, where disrespectful men of any color get shot? If they weren't respectful, is getting mouthy a reason to fire a weapon? Now, I will side with the police 99% of the time. I'm just wired that way. It is a job I cannot imagine having. The strain on them and their personal lives and their family day after day is unimaginable. And increasingly, the level of education and skill it takes to land one of these police jobs is disproportionate to what it pays. I don't think many people end up being police officers without some sense of calling. Really, I believe that. That said, we have a race of people living in fear of the authorities, and fear, when it permeates a culture, has significant effects. We have the presidential candidates we have right now because of fear. The two least liked candidates in memory. But we have them because we're afraid. The most common reason to choose one over the other is to prohibit someone else from gaining power because they're afraid of them. Trump supporters, afraid of Hillary. Hillary supporters, afraid of Trump. Welcome to fear-based government. We have the cultural segregation we have right now because of fear. Blacks and whites will separate themselves to discuss these shootings, and in their segregation, they will both reinforce their own opinions, the parts that are right and the parts that are wrong. If I were to ask you anything, it would be, listen to the nuggets of truth on both sides. Don't write anybody off. When that person appears on the TV screen and they are wailing and ranting, look for the parts of what they are saying that actually might be true. Also, I'd encourage you to pray for these families and communities, for your law enforcement officers. I refuse to believe that anything other than a narrow, narrow percentage of officers would want to hurt someone, but they all bear the stigma of what has happened. I want to close up with this. The thing that got me thinking about all this was on July 4th, Lecrae, the rapper, tweeted a picture. Maybe you saw it. He took a lot of heat for this, which I could not believe the blowback on it. But he took a lot of heat for a picture of a black family in a cotton field, picking cotton, clearly slaves. And he labeled it, "My Family, July 7, 1776. I saw that picture a few minutes before NPR did their annual reading of the Declaration of Independence, which they do every year on July 4th. And so I listened to the Declaration of Independence, the throwing off of bands of tyranny, and I tried to listen to it through the eyes of a black man. And it was hard. When we say things like we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. When we say that, and we know that the men who wrote it owned slaves, which they did not believe that to be true about, that's heavy. When we read things like the complaints listed against the King of England saying he has obstructed the administration of justice, or he has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people, or that he has quartered large bodies of armed troops among us and protected them by mock trial, depriving us of the benefits of trial by jury, transporting us beyond the seas to be tried for pretend offenses. When we read the Declaration of Independence and put ourselves as much as best as we can in the mind of a black man, is it any wonder they're a little suspicious of authority? Is it any wonder that they feel that the system is rigged against them? Again, I'm not speaking specifically to these two incidences. It's just that the situation is in our lap. There is much to learn, and much will support the police, much will support those who have been shot. But when you look at the system as a whole, is it any wonder that an entire race of people lives in fear? And what is our responsibility to them in proving ourselves like our nation has never, ever taken the time to do? Heavy thoughts, but we gotta have them, because we can't continue this way. Too many important, valuable people pushed to the side. We need their voice. Have a great day. We'll talk next week on the podcast.